Oh, hold up. Smell test. Go ahead. Sniff those pits. Now, your bits. Feet, toes, come on. Ugh. Could be fresher, right? It's all good. Old Spice Total Body Deodorant Spray is gentle enough to use all over your body, giving you 24/7 lasting freshness with daily use, from pits to toes and down below. So every smell test gets a... Shop for Old Spice Total Body Deodorant.
Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC alongside Craig Burley. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Much to get to in this show, but we got to start with the Merseyside derby. Liverpool and Everton, two teams at opposite sides of the Premier League table. And the possession stats would suggest that that's exactly how this match played out. 82% possession for Liverpool, but it took until the 62nd minute for them to find their breakthrough, courtesy of Andy Robertson, then Divock Origi adding another in the 85th as Liverpool takes all 3 points. What does it mean for the table? Well, they're just 1 point back of Manchester City. 79 points for Liverpool, 80 for Manchester City, with 5 matches to go in the Premier League campaign. Don Hutchison, Frank LaBeouf with us to discuss more. Boy, Don, Liverpool got the job done, but just...
Wow, where'd you start with this game? Liverpool, I thought, got sucked into Everton's physical style in the first half. I thought Everton were slightly wasting a little bit of time when Jordan Pickford was catching the ball and he was falling on the floor and he was winding the crowd up and they were all getting sucked in. Then all of a sudden, I think it got to half-time with one or two penalty claims. Then it got to half-time, I think Jurgen Klopp just said to his players, hey, come on, play your football, don't get sucked into this style. Second half, Liverpool were so much better, but there were so many big calls for the referee, Stuart Atwell, to try and make in this game, and it must have been difficult for him.
Where do you stand on those Anthony Gordon? Not so much the diving one, Don, the two pushes from Trent Alexander-Arnold in the first half and from Joel Matip, which was clearly in the box. Where do you stand on those challenges?
I thought the first one, Trent, was a push in the back. I thought he was banging trouble. Anthony Gordon got in behind and he was never going to catch him. And he sort of panicked Craig. I think he pushed him in the back. He took a chance and got away with it. The Anthony Gordon first one inside the box, I thought he dived. I thought he was looking for it. The other one, very debatable. And I'm not sitting on the fence. I think for the referee to try and call that one was hard. That's why I needed help from the VAR. But if I was leaning on any side, I would lean towards that being a foul and a penalty.
Frank, should Everton have had a penalty?
Well, the second one, no, because I think Gordon, I wasn't touched, but
what do you mean he wasn't touched? Come on, you're in defenders' union.
I said it wasn't a penalty. Wasn't a penalty. I don't know.
On the second one, what about this one, Frank?
And the second one, but the third Matip, it's a penalty for me, and Trent Alexander-Arnold pushed him, therefore it's a penalty as well. It's a full speed, you just have to touch him a bit, and he falls down. That's normal, that's a penalty. It's not legal to push somebody. It's not shoulder against shoulder, so for me, clearly, the two times with Alexander-Arnold and Matip, it was a penalty.
When you're challenging in the box, if you're shoulder to shoulder, yeah, fine. But once a player gets in front of you, and as I said, Gordon, the brain freeze here, I was just talking about him 30 seconds ago. Young Anthony Gordon's pace was a thorn in their side most of the game. Once he gets ahead of you, the arm comes out from Matip as it did from Alexander Arnold. And when you're running at that full pace and you're trying to get the ball, sometimes it is difficult to keep your balance when somebody pushes you. You're not allowed to, I can't remember if it's right or his left arm, you're not allowed to put that in straight into somebody's back. So I think Everton, I mean, I've no doubt Liverpool were the better team, but Everton are scrapping for their lives. Burnley had won earlier in the day. They dropped into the bottom three. It's a Merseyside derby. They're not playing well, right? Liverpool are on fire. You're going to have to get those decisions go for you. I keep going back to this, and I've seen somebody else talking about it today, and I don't know why this is a mindset of officials. Somebody will say, a penalty is more difficult to give than a free kick. Why? Why? It's either an infringement or it's not. It's a foul or it's not. And I guarantee you, Atwell would have given that as a foul, particularly the second one, anywhere. If that was in the middle of the park, he'd have blown up and gone foul. Because that's an easy decision for him. Right? And it shouldn't be. It shouldn't matter where it is in the field. And I think Everton can feel hard done by. And I think if you were in the blue half of Manchester, you would be looking at that game today thinking, oh my God, how are they not penalty kicks? And that's what Frank Lampard, I'm sure, is saying.
Don, was this a like championship quality performance from Liverpool in that they overcame Everton's tactics? Or was this like a game where Liverpool struggled and we should take maybe some concerns away from it from the Liverpool perspective?
I wouldn't take no concerns whatsoever, Sebi, to be honest. It's a Merseyside derby. It was never going to be easy. I think we're all coming back off the win against Man City and then the hammering against Man United. And you go into a Merseyside derby where Liverpool and Everton, the gap is 50 points between the two. 50. I mean, I can't remember the last time Everton and Liverpool, the gap was 50. It's incredible. So you've still gone into that game with a mindset thinking if Liverpool turn this on, they could win by three or four because they're that good. But then you factor in Everton, like Craig said, are scrapping for their life. They're fighting for every single ball. Their tactics were not Everton-like today, but I totally understand what they were trying to do. So from Liverpool's point of view, I wouldn't think of any concerns whatsoever, because even when Jurgen Klopp went to the bench and he brought Diaz on, he had one or two touches that were just out of this world. Origi was unbelievable. He was a player that all of a sudden Mo Salah could bounce balls off, took Sadio Mane off. I mean, the squad depth of Liverpool is just incredible. I can see these two sides being flawless to the end of the season unless some sort of shock happens and one of them draw a game. But these two teams are far and away the best.
Frank, you agree?
I have to agree. I mean, the numbers are showing the differences between them and the other teams, you know. Everybody's struggling, and they should in Europe, they should also in domestic, where Liverpool is about to win almost everything, except if Chelsea decides otherwise. But you have to realize, I think they are the two best teams in the world right now. I don't see in the Champions League Real Madrid or Villarreal creating damages toward those two teams. And I clearly see a final between those two in the Champions League.
I think what we saw today was, I think for me, confirmation that, you know, it was no Firmino. But he's not a regular now. Diego Jota played, fantastic signing, great player. The way he ghosts in to get goals, obviously not today, but as a generalisation, is a terrific asset for Liverpool. But I think, I was sitting there thinking, Diaz. Mm-hmm. He's just given them such an extra dimension. And I think it just confirms for me, if they were playing the FA Cup final tomorrow, or if it was Villarreal or Champions, whatever it was, Man City in the last game of the year, whatever it was, it's Diaz, Mane and Salah. As good as Jota and Firmino. And I think it just confirmed that little flatness that Diaz gives him, that extra spark. He's got a bit of everything. He runs with it. He can score goals. He's got trickery. He's got a terrific talent. His touch is fantastic. And I just think once he come on with Origi, that was just the signal that this had to change.
Those guys came on in the 60th minute. Robertson gets a breakthrough in the 62nd.
Of course, you needed a Scotsman to get them off.
Right, thank you for pointing that out. Let's take a look at the bottom of the table. That is where we find Everton, who actually find themselves in an even worse spot after a big win for Burnley. They got a 1-0 victory over Wolves. So there you have it. Burnley 17, Everton below the relegation line.
They could go.
And here are the odds then to see who will go down. Everton, doesn't look good. Don, let me ask you this first, before we get into Everton's chances of staying up. You played for the club. You know a lot of people that are Everton fans. You know Frank Lampard. What'd you think of the approach today? Because Jordan Pickford's, he's wasting time in the first half.
I mean, I understand it, Sebi. It's not one for the purist. The Evertonians will be looking at that, thinking that's not what we want to see from our manager, not what we want to see from our team. But I think against Liverpool, it was understandable. It's a one-off game in a Merseyside derby where you know you go toe-to-toe with Liverpool. Honestly, if Everton had just went, you know what, we are going to back ourselves to play against Liverpool and we are going to play pure football. Liverpool walk away with five or six. They really do. They would have absolutely mauled Everton because they're light years ahead. So I totally understand the approach. Why play into Liverpool's hands? So make it ugly. Frustrate them. Frustrate Anfield. It was happening. for 45 minutes, the fans inside the stadium were going ballistic, especially at Jordan Pickford and his time wasting and the sort of dark arts that was going on. But why would you open up, Sebi, against Liverpool? You just wouldn't. You can get done six, you wouldn't.
Burnley's win, obviously huge for them. Big trouble now for Everton.
Huge.
You think they go down?
I think there's every chance. I mean, that's a bit of a non-answer, really, isn't it? I mean, I'll admit that myself. I just have no faith. And obviously, Burnley sacked Sean Dyche, and that was like, oh, but he's very good at keeping them up. But they've had a response. But I think they were always going to have a response. They've been down there before recently, and a lot of occasions. They know what it's like down there. It's a little bit. I know Everton haven't had a great time, but being in the bottom three is fresh for them. And I look at the Everton, just wonder how much can they, because this isn't, they're not going to get out of this by playing silky soccer. We're now at the stage of the season that we are judging characters now. The guys will know this. Who's going to do the basics? Who's going to be up for the fight? Who's going to handle the supporters waiting for us all week at the training ground, telling us how bad we are, telling us how we better get our finger out? And who's going to shirk the responsibility and end up in the treatment room and wave the white flag? That's what it's going to come down to. And Lampard's going to find out very, very quickly who's on board in that front. I've been in that scenario with Derby County. And it's horrible. It's much better being at the other end. It's easy. Mm. And you're down there and you're scrapping. It's absolutely horrible. And I have no confidence at the moment in Everton to get themselves out of this. None whatsoever. Burnley have got a cut result. Leeds have had a cut results and changed the manager. Everton, they've not had the new manager kickback since Frank Lampard came in. I would be concerned if I was an Everton fan that I'd be watching Championship football next season.
Don, what do you say? Everton going down?
I think there's every chance. I look at Burnley. I think what Burnley have got is they've got good players and people like Dwight McNeil, who's now playing with a smile on his face since the new manager's come in. Maxwell Cornet is a player. Veghorst is scoring goals. They've got hard work in midfield players. They've got really solid defenders like Tarkowski, who's really, really solid, and Ben Mee when he's fit. The trouble with Everton, Sebi, is you look at the back line and you think Mason Holgate and Michael Keane are not two dependable centre-backs that's going to keep you clean sheets. They are not. And then at the top end of the pitch, Craig talked about the white flag being sort of waved. Straight away, I thought Dominic Calvert-Lewin. He's injured. He might be missing for the rest of the season. So he's going to have to rely somehow on Richarlison, Anthony Gordon, Damari Gray, maybe Rondon at a push, trying to get you out of trouble. But when you look at Everton, there's a lack of clean sheets there, especially away from home. If you're a manager delivering a team talk to play against Everton when you're at home and Everton are away, you score the first goal, lads, these will crumble. Because that's what Everton do. They've got a chance when they play at Goodison, and that's their only hope, that they pick up enough points at Goodison, because then their travels are horrendous.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Chelsea leaving it late against West Ham, but Christian Pulisic off the bench with a game winner in the 90th minute. May not have had to be the game winner had Jorginho converted his penalty about 10 minutes prior, but the Italian missed. Frank, should Jorginho still be taking those pens?
Well, on the crucial ones, and he shot some, you know, for the national team of Italy. It wasn't successful, so I think he should get a little break, you know. I mean, again, the way he runs, the way he jumps, you know, if you score, that's fine, you know, everybody will say you're a genius. And when you miss it, you look stupid. And this will happen clearly on that situation. where, well, it looks like a 7 year old shooting a penalty. So he's clearly a specialist. But again, when you try those kind of stuff, and I'm against that, you can look like a stupid person when you miss it. Yeah, again, the only thing you have to think about when you shoot a penalty is to score the goal, not to play with the goalkeeper, not to try to trick the goalkeeper. It's to put the ball in the net. That's the only thing which counts.
Definitely in his head, isn't it?
You think so?
Bearing in mind he cost his country a place at the World Cup, mm-hmm. effectively, by not scoring that late penalty in the final qualification.
So do the people around him then need to say, hey, don't take more penalties? I mean, isn't that down to the manager?
Well,
teammate, captain, whoever it might be?
I mean, bearing in mind this game didn't mean a lot. In fact, it meant pretty little, apart from trying to get back on track. I'm neither here nor there with it.
But there's an important penalty coming for Chelsea at some point. Do you want Jorginho standing over it?
The important penalty might be in, well, they've only one competition left they can which is an FA Cup final. So, yeah, it could come down to that. And no, it's something that they might have to revisit because clearly he was the most super confident guy taking penalties and now he's missed two or three big ones. This is not a particularly big one, but it's just sort of highlights it again. And it's definitely in his head. It's a psychological thing. It's not a technique. It's psychological. Start doubting yourself.
It's a little bit of technique,
feeling?
Right?
Do you know that feeling when you start doubting yourself?
When I work with you.
So, yeah, big FA Cup final coming up. I think more importantly for Chelsea, poor against Arsenal, got beaten. Not great again today. Can't let the season run flat till May 14th, which is when the FA Cup final is. Mm-hmm. Thomas Tuchel's got a job to pick his team up to make sure that they're going into that with some momentum. Mm.
Thomas Tuchel got bailed out today, Don, by Christian Pulisic, didn't he?
He did. It was a shocker of a pen, but Pulisic off the bench got the job done. It wasn't a great game, in all honesty. Chelsea are flat. They're missing Kovacic. I'm not sure you can play Jorginho in the centre of the park and then Ruben Loftus-Cheek as a wing-back together. They slow the play down far too much. But as Craig said, they need some sort of momentum trying to get close to an FA Cup final. It's the only thing they've got to play for. They've got to try and win some games. At the back, they're not solid. There's loads of stories about different players leaving and the young players like Chalobah playing, and maybe Sarr needs to do a little bit more because he's a bright young player that's going through a tough time. But you watch Chelsea at the minute and they are really flat.
Some interesting comments from Thomas Tuchel after the match on Christian Pulisic, who did get the, as I mentioned, game winner. But he kind of explained why Pulisic has been dropped from the starting lineup recently, because this is, I think, fifth or sixth game that he's not started after he had been pretty much a lockdown starter for a month or so. Pulis struggled a little bit since he came back from international break, where I think he had three matches and incredible amounts of journeys and time zones to cope with. From there, he struggled a bit energy-wise. That was my impression on and off the pitch. Sometimes it is like this. Does that mean that international duty has cost him his starting spot?
I don't know. Maybe.
That's what I take away from that quote. Is that fair?
Look, you have to handle the trials and tribulations of travel. It just so happens he's, you know, for us, most of us, we were traveling around Europe. He has to travel transatlantic. That's part of the deal. So it can affect players. I'm glad Thomas Tuchel is making the statement to sort of end the paranoid group of people over here, this side of the pond, who think everybody is anti-American when somebody doesn't play. Mm-hmm. But usually a manager has deeper, more important, more realistic factors than that. And it usually is, you know, a player's form, a player's welfare, and what can his state of mind, Christian Pulisic, said. So, yeah, I mean, once again, we're having this chat about whether Pulisic plays or not. I don't signal Christian Pulisic out over any player at Chelsea or any other club. A manager picks his team, and so be it. Am I been clear?
No, yes, you're being clear. Frank, should international duty be something that costs a player a spot in the 11?
It can happen, as Craig said, if you travel transatlantic, but especially comment from Thomas Tuchel, I hear that, and I understand that, in fact, Pulisic doesn't digest jet lag, where Thiago Silva, who is 37, can play in Brazil, can travel, can go back and play. So it says a lot, you know. So I think when you're 37, you normally have more trouble traveling transatlantic, which is, doesn't seem the case for Thiago Silva, understanding to the comment of Mr. Tuchel.
Don, why are you shaking your head?
It's just absolute waffle. I mean, is this the same Thomas Tuchel that's turning around blaming the pitch when they lost against Real Madrid? And then blamed the pitch and he said, the pitch is not the same pitch like it is at Cobham when they lost 4-2 against Arsenal. I mean, he's a bright man, Thomas Tuchel. I understand exactly what he's trying to say, but it's just waffle. We flew all around the world and you play games and you suck it up and you get on with it and you're playing in the Premier League or you're playing for your country, you find some energy. You don't just like wilt and go, I flew halfway around the world, I'm a little bit tired, boss. I can't play for 2 or 3 weeks. Nonsense. Just play.
I don't think this would have been coming from Christian Pulisic, but I think I agree with Don in some sense that this is code for... It's amazing how a manager sees a player who lacks some energy, and that's his explanation. That's code for, you're not playing this week because you haven't been playing particularly well, so I'm not picking you. And he'll give you some sort of balderdash excuse about how the flying's going to affect you and all that, when ultimately he just doesn't want you in the team. So, you know, it is what it is. It's part of the job.
Speaking of things that Thomas Tuchel has said recently, he had some interesting comments about Antonio Rudiger, who now looks like it's set. He's going to go to Real Madrid. Here's what Tuchel had to say on the situation. The situation is that he wants to leave the club. He informed me of this in a private talk. We gave everything, me and the club, but we could not fight anymore because of the actions. Without the sanctions, we would at least be able to carry on fighting, but our hands are tied. We don't take it personally. It is his decision. Frank, how big of a blow is this to Chelsea?
A big one. And in fact, since Tuchel signed for the club, we discovered a new Rudiger, and because of him, it made him indispensable. And he's been absolutely fantastic. He's been the warrior outside on the field, but I was told also in the dressing room, fantastic player, fantastic man. He, every game that he played, I saw even him screaming at N'Golo Kanté. Well, nobody wants to scream at N'Golo Kanté. N'Golo Kanté is perfect. He does everything perfectly. But really, it's not enough for Rüdiger, you know. But I love Antonio Rüdiger. I think he did a great time, you know, for the past a year and a half. Helped Chelsea winning the Champions League. And he's at the end of his contract. He's aging, and he has the right to choose his future. And I would be sad because he's an important person. But at least... and I was fortunate.
Uh-oh.
I have his shirt.
Do you have to give it back now, Frank?
Frank, you'll have to fly to Madrid. Get a Real Madrid one.
We'll see.
Yeah. I understand the sanctions. Look, I don't understand the sanctions.
There was a time we thought that wouldn't really impact Chelsea. This is, if we take Tuchel at his word, that's a huge impact.
Well, let's not try and say that their season's been impacted by the sanctions, because their season was coming off the rails domestically at Christmas, right? So I understand it's not ideal, but please let's not go down the road of Chelsea are not playing well because of sanctions. That's a nonsense. If I was Antonio Rüdiger, I'd leave.
Why?
Well, one, we don't know how the ownership is going to be, and are they going to put the same amount of money in as the previous owner? Albeit it was the Russian money. No, I don't think they will. Two, do I want to be playing for a club at this point in my career that is still a fair chunk away from Liverpool and City? Having gone out and bought what they thought was the missing piece last summer in Romelu Lukaku. And at his age, with a free transfer and a potential move to Real Madrid, and with all these things, and Thomas Tuchel has not shown yet in England that he can take the fight to Guardiola and Klopp. Not yet. Yes, he's won the Champions League, but so did Roberto Di Matteo. I keep saying this as an interim manager. It's all about 38 games. So if I was Antonio Rüdiger, bearing in mind Chelsea's league position, which is third, bearing in mind Chelsea's problems with the sanctions and the ownership, and they need to go out and replenish and replace Lukaku again, he's not going to work. If I was Tony Rüdiger, particularly the way he's playing, would jump on a plane and I would leave, and I think that's what he's going to do. That's not down to sanctions. I think he would have left anyway.
Either way, Chelsea a lock to be in the top four. Get one.
And that's a big blow for them, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. But this season,
huge blow.
Third place, lock to be in the Champions League. It's a big drop point, I guess you could say, for West Ham, who were seventh. Their hopes of finishing.
I'm just pleasing Chelsea fans this year, aren't I?
Look at you. How the tables have turned.
My God.
So here we
hit me more than Frank.
Odds to finish in the top four. Arsenal right now getting the best shot from the odds makers. Craig, I think last week you said Manchester United.
Yeah, but like I came. Look.
Are you going for a big payoff?
No, I came back. Yeah, Arsenal were struggling. Had lost three in a row. Tottenham, it's a rocky road. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, I just threw Man United in there. That was before the Liverpool game away. I think it's an absolute disgrace at this. I mean, we've talked Man United till the cows come home. This is who Arsenal and Tottenham have got left. Arsenal have just hit a little bit of form again, right? Which is good for them. You know, got to go to West Ham. They've got European football in their mind. Leeds are fighting for life. Then they've got the London Derby, North London Derby, huge. Newcastle are flying. Newcastle have, you know, mid-table. And then obviously Everton. We don't know what scenario Everton are going to be in. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's just big games all round for these two. But yeah, Arsenal are in the box seat. But what my point being is, I think it's an absolute disgrace having spent the budget that United have spent and the players that they've brought in, that they can't even be above those two clubs there. Mm. I mean, what an absolute shambles that is. And, you know, if the week couldn't get any worse, there was the performance at Anfield and then the defeat at the Emirates. I mean, my God. Yep. I didn't think they could stoop any lower. But United are absolutely rock bottom.
If United fans are worried, what about Spurs fans here, Don? Scoreless draw against Brentford, another game with no shots on goal. Not what you want in the chase for the top four.
Yeah. No, just when you think Spurs have got a crack, when they won four on the spin, you think, right, that's them. That's them top four. I think we all probably would have said at the time, yep, fancy Spurs. Then they go through a couple of games, like you said, where they lose against Brighton, they don't score at the weekend. And then their next two is Leicester-Liverpool. So you look at Tottenham, you just think, I don't see a run in them. Unless they like to play against the Leicesters and the Liverpools of this world like they did against Man City, unless that's their way forward in terms of defending, counter-attack and hit teams on the break. But when they're trying to beat the lower sides, if you like, where they're dominating the ball, they just can't do it. You can't rely on them. So at the minute, as it stands, I think it's in Arsenal's hands.
Hmm. Speaking of Spurs, interesting reports that Antonio Conte has offered his services, Craig, to PSG. While he's under contract.
Well, I'm offering mine as well, by the way.
At Spurs. Frank, what do you make of this? The timing seems awfully weird.
That's very strange. You know, I checked, you know, before the show if he was free of contract, you know, with Spurs at the end of the season. And he's not. He signed a contract until the summer 2023, and therefore belongs to Spurs. And you're in the middle of a fight, and you just talked about that, you know, whether they're going to get the Champions League and everything. So we saw the schedule, but I was thinking, what's going to happen to the players? Mm. We suddenly realized that the coach doesn't really care about what's going on for Spurs because he wants to get the PSG job. I think he's disrespectful towards the club which hire you in November. And maybe you realize that Tottenham is not belonging to your league, but you have to fight because you signed a contract and you shouldn't be able to talk. Well, just make sure people are going to talk about this, that you're interested about signing for PSG and you're therefore ready to leave Spurs. I think he's out of respect, for sure. And I'm very appalled by that comment, if it's a comment, if it's been really said by Antonio Conte.
I'll guarantee.
Hopefully, he's going to tell us the truth.
Hmm. I'll guarantee. Yeah, well, I won't hold my breath for that, Frank. But I guarantee his people behind the scenes will be looking for an exit strategy. Don't kid yourself that a few good results and some better performances.
Will it hurt Spurs in the top four chase, as Frank kind of alluded to?
Well, he's not going to leave now.
No, but this is a distraction. The players will surely see this.
Yeah, I don't think it's a big deal to, no. between now and the season. But I think Conte knows, and I'm not saying it's right, but he's looking for the opportunities out there. He knows how Tottenham operate. He knew before he came in, but yet he still moaned about the signings, the players, the squad. And he's going to have the same thing in the summer again. They're not going to go out and spend money like the big boys. It's not going to happen. So, yeah, I think if he gets a chance, he'll tell you otherwise. He'll say, no, I'm not. If nothing comes around, he'll say, no, I'm happy here. I've got work to do and making changes. And then if something comes up, the first chance, he'll jump ship. Mm. Trust me. Because he knows how they operate. And he knows how they operate is not going to, even with a good coach, is not going to worry the boys at the top. Just look at the difference in points and tell me how you close that gap between the two guys, teams going for the title, and where Spurs are. That's millions and millions and millions of dollars to spend, and they are not going to do that. Mm.
Don, Frank used the word disrespectful. You agree?
Yeah, it just feels weird, Seb. It's like, I mean, if I was PSG, and I was Leonardo, and I was the owners of PSG, I would take that as a little bit of a, do we really want this guy? Because if we bring him in, and he's in 6 months in charge at PSG, and all of a sudden Real Madrid sack their manager, or Xavi's struggling at Barca, and they're looking for him for a new manager, will then he want to then leave PSG? So it's a bit like, just do your job at Tottenham. Don't know about his character. I've never saw that in Antonio Conte before, where he would sort of jeopardise top four. And I'd feel a little bit for Kulusevski, who's been brought in on loan with a view to sign. If then you're hearing this about Antonio Conte maybe wanting to leave, you're then not going to want to try and stay at Tottenham because you don't know who the next manager is. Bentancur's been signed. He must be thinking what's going on there. So it all just feels like the timing is really, really weird and a bit off.
I just feel that Antonio Conte thinks he's much bigger than Tottenham. Or Tottenham are not big enough for him. Not that he's bigger than a club, but that Tottenham are not big enough for him. You know, huge success at Juventus, success at Chelsea, success at Inter. These are all huge clubs that have had success, particularly in Chelsea's case in the last 20 years, whatever it is. And I just feel that he thinks this is a stepping stone because what's Tottenham's success been in the last 20 or 25 years compared to the others? And I just feel that he thinks that, yeah, he wanted to get back into management, but he wanted to get back in and use it to bridge that time in between being out of work and another big job coming up. Because he knows, in his heart of heart, Harry Kane, Heung-min Son, all these players, yeah, they're fine. But you're not going to build a squad to take on the big boys in England. And that's all he's interested in. It's all he was interested in Inter, it's all he was interested at Juve, all he was interested in at Chelsea. So, look, we can talk about scruples all we like. There's none of them got any.
The trophy chase for Spurs will continue for at least another season. Then we got a trophy to hand out on Saturday, May 14th from Wembley, Liverpool-Chelsea in the FA Cup final. You can watch it right here on ESPN+, Plus, streaming live, of course, on the ESPN app as well.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Rayo Vallecano with a big shocking upset win at the Camp Nou. So let's take a look at the top of La Liga. Barcelona 15 points back of Real Madrid. They'll surely be disappointed with the drop points today. Sevilla, Atletico Madrid round out your top four. Real Betis, who just claimed the Copa del Rey, fifth in the Spanish top flight. For more, we got Pablo Zabaleta alongside us. We'll go to Pablo in a second, but my goodness, 11 minutes of extra time, Craig.
Listen, I'm actually surprised we're sitting here talking about this game. I thought the officials were going to put a board up that said, we're just playing until Barcelona equalise. 14 minutes of injury time we played. Now, I know we had a couple of knocks, one to the goalkeeper, and then we had a...
Palazón had the cut on his head.
A relatively serious head knock from the scissor kick, but it was attended to quite quickly. We had a few substitutions, but 11 minutes, and then playing 14. That's, to me, almost like trying to get them back in the game.
And even with that, Barcelona couldn't get back in the game.
No, they couldn't. They were awful, yeah, and Vallecano were excellent, bearing in mind their squad, the budgets. Another defeat for Xavi, another poor defeat at home from a team that had one win in 13 coming in, a poor away record. And I know there's a big picture here, and I understand there's a big picture, and the picture is Champions League qualification in next season. But this string of results would have these Barcelona fans trying to string Ronald Koeman on the back of a bus and drag him round the streets of Barcelona. So Xavi's going to get away with it for the time being, but he'll have to sort it out for next season. Otherwise, the fans will turn. There's no doubt about it. This season for me is all about making a few excuses, if that's what they want to do, bringing in a few different pieces of the jigsaw, getting players out. But next year, I don't think you'll have that luxury.
Pablo, what happened? I mean, we're talking about this year, but there was such a good vibe and good play around this Barcelona team. I know we've talked about the injuries, but surely that can't explain everything that's happened in the last 5-6 weeks under Xavi.
Football. That's why, it's a great sport, and sometimes you go from being really good, keep winning games and all that, and then such a really bad performance from the whole team, because I think individually some of the players, they're not being good enough. Collectively as a team, it's not, the Barcelona that of 2 months ago, that they were playing with a huge tempo on the ball. They were, scoring goals and all that. So, third consecutive defeat for Barcelona at home, against some of the team that were struggling in La Liga. So obviously Xavi has a lot of job to do, thinking in the future. Champions League is massive for them. They have to secure a Champions League spot. It's only 6-point different with Betis at the moment, or 4 or 5 teams just fighting for that Champions League spot. But a lot of things for Xavi to improve thinking about next season.
A lot of it, Craig, probably has to come down to the individual performances. Like, we talk about a guy like Frankie de Jong. He was so good when they were rolling, and today?
I've talked about him all the time when I'm on this show, it seems, and we've seen the odd good performance. Pablo talked about him at halftime. Then he was taken off in the second half. I think long-term, he's not going to get away with, and his manager won't suffer these kind of inconsistent performances where, when he's playing for Ajax and Holland and... You can have a down period generally, but you can't at Barcelona because the eyes are on you of the world, not just that country. And the expectations are so much higher. And you've got youngsters around about you who are offering more. And he reminded me a little bit of, not as bad, but Bruno Fernandes in the last 12 months at Man United, who has spent, I think, the bulk of his time whinging about being kicked and moaning to referees. And it's almost as if he's got a divine right to be on the field and not be challenged physically. Frankie de Jong did that a lot today. Yes, he was fouled, I'll give you that, on 3 or 4 occasions. And every time he got up and he moaned and he whined at the referee, get on with it. You're a Barcelona player. These guys are going to come out and be physical with you. They're going to make challenges on you. You have to accept that. You can't spend your time concentrating on having a go at the referee. Get the ball down, play it quickly, get on with it. But Xavi saw it a similar way, because he took him off because he thought he had better players on the bench, and he had better kept Gavi on. He kept young players on, took experienced international players who have played at World Cups off. He's got to have a look at himself in the mirror.
Pablo, you were very critical of Frankie de Jong at the half. What do you think's happened to the player?
Well, because I still do believe he's a really good player, and he can give more. I don't know if he has not confidence, or I don't know. Ten Hag is going to Manchester United, and maybe there were some rumors that, you know, Frankie de Jong is a potential signing for Manchester United. I don't know, but you know, we have seen him in Ajax playing good football, and he's not doing that at Barcelona. I mean, you know, at Barca you have to do this every single game, week in, week out. You have to be the main man. Even now that Pedri is injured, he's out of the team probably for the rest of the season. He needs the personality to go out and say, okay, I'm the guy who, you know, we let that Barcelona play, and we get on the ball and we make things happen. But, you know, he's, I don't know what's wrong with him, you know, but he has to do a lot better. You know, in Barcelona, you have to do more than we have shown today.
Pablo, do you think this team can turn it around, can play better? You mentioned Pedri's probably out for the season if he doesn't come back, or is it just down to they need Pedri?
Yeah, but they cannot rely on one player. They're Barcelona. I mean, if you look at the whole team in midfield, they have Busquets, Gavi, Frankie de Jong. Come on, those players are good enough to play a lot better and to produce better football, to bring more, I don't know, creativity in the final third. But the reality, the current form of that Barcelona team and some of the players in the last few games not being good enough, and that's you know, that's why always Xavi in the last 10 minutes of the game they have to bring always Adama Traoré and Luke de Jong to put balls in into the box and see if they can get something from a cross or something like that. So this is not the way that Xavi would like to play, but he has to do it because he can see that some of the players in midfield, they're not producing much football at the moment.
Yeah, you can't be blaming Pedri when you have this squad to pick from. Yeah, it's not the best Barca squad by a long shot, but they've just gone out of the Europa League to Eintracht Frankfurt, who sit ninth in the Bundesliga. They've just lost at home to Cadiz. Mm-hmm. They've just lost at home to Rayo Vallecano. They were pretty awful against Real Sociedad. That's not down to one player. It's not down to a youngster.
So who's it on then?
Well,
because Xavi got a lot of credit when they were winning.
I think there's a sense that, and maybe this is something that he's going to have to figure out with these players, there's a sense that when Aubameyang and Traore and one or two of these players came in, and Xavi himself, that it was automatic. They're on this right road. They were getting better results. They get the classical win, big win, 4-0. And all of a sudden, right, it's just going to happen for us. We've made it. Mm. We're back. And there's almost a sense that they've taken their foot off the gas. You go to these top teams. You go and look, for example, Liverpool and Man City and these coaches, Klopp and Guardiola, the real best. They don't accept week in, week out anything other than what you delivered the week before if it was good. They don't suffer taking your foot off the gas. And I just wonder if they've taken their foot off the gas because they think the season's over. Mm. And they've not nailed that Champions League spot just yet.
Pablo, what do you think? Are Barcelona lacking for motivation? No real trophies to chase anymore? Is that maybe what we're seeing from this team as it struggles?
No. I mean, they're Barcelona. They have to play every single way, 100%, because you have to win. When you are at Barca, you know, this club demand everything. I know they've been out of the Champions League. Probably they were not happy playing the Europa League, but it is what it is. You have to accept it, but you have to go into every single game and choose to put in a good performance, and you have to, you know, win almost every single game. But, you know, they were doing this, but now it seems like, you know, the team is not playing with that confidence. Defensively, they're still doing so many mistakes that cost them goals, games. But I don't know, obviously thinking, you know, for the next five games of the season, they have to, I don't know, they have to fix something. They have to look and see what went wrong in the last few games. They have to win, you know, at least three of those games to secure a Champions League spot. And then they will need to go in the summer and see if Dembélé wants to stay or he wants to leave. see some of the players still happy at Barcelona, or they will bring some players in that will improve the quality of the team. Because also, don't forget, if they go and play in Champions League next season, I mean, they have to compete against the best teams. So they have to go and compete with Real Madrid again for La Liga, and they've not been, you know, good enough this season to challenge all those teams. So, I mean, it's going to be difficult. If you look at the situation right now, probably a few weeks ago, everyone was happy. Xavi was the right man. And I think you have to trust him. You have to give him time and see in the summer if they can strengthen this squad.
Pablo, you talked about the future. Where do you think the biggest concern is for Xavi? Is it in defense where they look vulnerable today, or is it in attack where they had, you know, four shots on goal, but really through 90 minutes they had one shot on goal against Rayo at home?
Well, defensively, obviously, I don't know. They have to go and look for a center back for sure. Eric Garcia at the moment is young. He got a good future, but he's not performing well enough. Araujo, I don't know, with his contract, you know, there's been some rumor that apparently he will agree and he will stay. They need to find a left back to give Jordi Alba some rest, see what happened to the right back. I don't know. Up front, you have Dembélé, that he's probably been one of the best players for Barcelona in the last few games, but I don't know if he wants to stay or he wants to leave. Aubameyang, I don't know. Luke De Jong, Depay, I don't know if he's happy. If he's happy under playing under Xavi. So, I don't know. It's so many positions where you have to understand if some of the players would like to stay next season. But same, if you go to the transfer market these days and you want to buy some world-class player, it will cost a lot of money. I don't know if they will, you know, financially at the moment, they've been in a bad situation. I don't know if they can afford to buy three or four world-class players. Probably they will need to look a player on a free again. So, I don't know. It's going to be tough for Barcelona. You know, it's not that easy, but thinking about the future next season, they will definitely need to improve this squad.
I think if you... I don't know what... It's hard to summarise that, as Pablo said, because there's so many things that he may need to do. But I go back to it, I think if you look, and I'm not, and I know this is, we're coming off the back of Spanish coverage, and I'm bringing two teams in because I think they are the two teams to look up to at the moment, is Liverpool and City. Is both those teams built from the back? Liverpool, it was about defenders, it was about a goalkeeper, it was about Van Dijk, and it was about the fullbacks. It was the same at City. When Guardiola went in, they had some defensive issues. He wanted fullbacks. He wanted to change the fullbacks. He wanted centre halves. Obviously, changed the goalkeeper. They did have some really good players. I give you that. It's not that you don't buy any other players, but both of those managers, as attacking as they are, and their philosophy, they went out and they've bought defenders. Without really good defenders and a goalkeeper, you cannot have the platform to go and have success. Yeah, you can have the flair and you can have some good performances, but it's the backbone. A defensive midfielder, you know, again, Fabinho, Rodri, these kind of people, Casemiro at Real Madrid, you have to have that backbone to allow these youngsters, these flair players, to go and play. And I personally think that's where he should start. I'm not saying that's where he will. But I think until they build from the back with Piqué's age and the others unconvincing, then all the good football in the world, and don't forget, there's no Lionel Messi's 50 goals now to paper over any of these cracks. That's gone. That's long gone. So he's going to have to, I think, they're going to have to figure it out, how they're going to build this team from the back and then take it forward. Without that, I don't think they'll have success outside of Spain anytime soon.
Andres Christensen from Chelsea looks like he could be making the move to Barcelona. Pablo, you think that would be the fix?
Well, could be. I don't know. You know, they, as we spoke before, Seb, they definitely need to improve that squad. Chris said, defensively, they having so many problems recently, and, you know, Piquet is coming at the end of his career. He cannot play every single game. And you need a solid, you know, back four who can give it a chance to feel secure at the back, to be solid. And then, you know, they have quality enough, you know, in some of those positions in midfield to create something. But the problem also, if I have time to mention, that Pedri been playing last season, I don't know, more than 60, 70 games. And that's the problem with Barcelona at the moment. If you, if you're your best player, you play them every single game, it's going to be difficult because you have to rotate. When you play so many competitions, if you look at the Man City squad, Liverpool and all that, they can rotate and they have, they can give players a chance to rest, which is something important to come to at the end of the season and having those players physically and mentally fresh to play some of the most important games.
As always, Pablo, great stuff. We'll let you go. Real Madrid with a point, not even a win next week, can clinch the La Liga title. What about the bottom of the table? Let's take a look at what this victory means for Rayo Vallecano. They entered the day 14th place in the table, 7 points from the drop zone. And look at that. They move up to 11th. Not to that 40-point plateau. Should be enough.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's get some post-match reaction. We'll start with the manager, Xavi.
With Xavi Hernandez, how can you explain this third defeat in a row here at the Camp Nou?
Well, I can say that we didn't play well in the first half. The second half was a bit better, but it was really difficult to attack this defense. Very slow game today, especially in the second half. We create many chances. We didn't have effectivity to score some goal at least. But this is more or less the same story than against Cádiz. So we need to continue, keep going. Of course, it's a step back, very good step back. It's a problem, but okay, we need to continue. We need to believe.
Once again, the opponent gets the first goal. This happened in the five of the last six games. It is a question of there is less physicality or mentality. The team has a lack of being strong.
I think it was the effectivity, the problem. We create, I don't know how many times we shoot today. And Cádiz, Rayo Vallecano shoot maybe 2-3 times like Cádiz, no? But it's the same story. It's the same story. We need to be effective. We need to start better the game, especially in the first half. We didn't play well, and we need to continue. This is the way. It's a hard way, but we need to believe.
Today you had a great chance to secure the goal, a Champions League spot. It's a setback, as you mentioned. But how can you put the team back in the game to have this motivation that maybe it's not that big as being in Europe or trying to clinch the title?
Well, we need to continue. This is football, this is life. We need to continue believing. Of course, it's a difficult situation because today we lost a big opportunity to create more distance against our rivals. So we need to continue. This is the way.
One last question. You mentioned yesterday that amazing win at the Bernabeu was something like science fiction. I don't know if it has some kind of bad effect because the players thought they were in a different position.
No, it was totally real, of course, 0-4 against Madrid. But this is like a long race. Sometimes we play well, sometimes we play bad. Today we didn't play well, but if we could have effectivity, maybe we are talking about now of 3 points. But this is football.
Okay, thank you, Xavi.
Thank you.
Gracias.
Gemma Soler, who conducted that interview with Xavi Hernandez, joining us now. Gemma, you were there, and you were there for it live and in person, a third straight defeat at the Camp Nou. What was the atmosphere like?
Well, it was terrible, it was such a disappointment. It was something historical. Never in the same season Barcelona suffered three defeats in a row here at the Camp Nou. One of the consequences, maybe, the team, the substitutes are training just now in my back. They are just finishing that training. And is what I think Xavi tried to explain us, that the only thing we can do is put us back up together and continue and keep going. And I think there is one strong thing. The team improved a lot with Xavi and his staff about the physicality, and it's somehow that the team got tired. It's true that since the international break they had a strong agenda with lots of games, and somehow they lose the brightness they win with Xavi. But even himself is difficult for him to get an explanation of how that team that was able to manage that amazing big win at the Bernabeu now is having two defeats in a row in La Liga against Cadiz in a relegation area, and against Rayo, a team who is the one of the worst teams away from home. It's difficult to explain, but this team has somehow lost the brightness, and I think they are missing so much Pedri in the midfield and also captain Gerard Piqué in the back.
Gemma, what about the fans? They were obviously unhappy heading into this match. They're not going to be any more pleased coming out of it.
Yes, they were very upset. Actually, you know what happened in the last game against Cadiz, the noisy stand, the animation, that's what we call them here. They did a protest. They decided not to come. Well, today they were there, but it was just half of them. Actually, the number at the end of the game, it was 57,000, so it's a little bit more than the half of the stadium, so half stadium empty, and somehow a little bit disappointed, because I think they have a contagion of the players, because there's no title to fight for the Champions League spot. I mean, two games before it was almost for sure they will be having it, but now they put that in risk, losing those 6 points against two teams that everyone was counting on, those six points against Cadiz and Rayo Vallecano was something. Of course, we will get that at home. Now the team, maybe it will be some kind as an alarm clock that they cannot sleep anymore. They have to stand up. They have another tricky team here coming on Sunday, Mallorca, a team battling, struggling for in the relegation area. So I think it will be a similar scenario. We'll see if the team manages to react. It's true that they will be having a clean week where they can rest a bit, is what Xavi announced at us. They will have a couple of days off, and then they will start trying to improve that physicality.
Gemma, you're in Barcelona now, but yesterday you were in Paris to see PSG clinch their Ligue 1 title. The fans there weren't much happier, though. They weren't exactly celebrating. We hear reports that the ultras actually left before the celebrations occurred. What did you see in the stadium?
Yeah, well, it was probably one of the most surrealistic wins. Actually, it was a draw, but it was a win. They clinched mathematically the title, the Ligue 1 title that I have experienced in my life. We knew it ahead, that the ultras, they announced that they were very disappointed, both with the club and the players. And at minute 75, the team was winning, they would leave the stadium. And they did. It was not the whole crowd, all the stands, but it was a big number of people, around 500 or more. They decided to go to the street and to celebrate by themselves. They didn't want to celebrate with the players, that they think they didn't do well enough because of that traumatic knockout in the Champions League. It was surreal during the game. If there is a part of the public who were cheering for Messi or for Neymar, they will insult them, they will shout at them. Like it was a very strange atmosphere, and there is like a big divorce against this ultras part of the public at Parc des Princes and the rest of the team and the club.
Gemma, it's interesting that you mentioned Neymar, because you actually did a post-match interview with him that has since gone all over the world. Everybody talking about what he told you. Here's the quote. It was surreal that part of the crowd left the stands. They're going to get tired of whistling because I have another 3 years left on my contract. What was your reaction when he told you that?
Well, you know, when you read it like this, it sounds like he was challenging the stands and the ultras and everything. And I don't think he said it in this way. But what he meant is, like, I have a 3 more years contract. I try to do my best. I can understand they are deceived because of we didn't get farther away in the Champions League. But I will stay. They will get tired of shouting at me or whistling at me. So I think he meant it in that way. And, you know, he's that kind of player that it has this big sense of humor. He laughed, actually, at the end of the interview. So it was not that as shocking as when you think what he's saying, because he's saying that in a context of very bad atmosphere at the stadium. But the players, all of them, they were very upset about this situation because they felt alone. At some point, they were winning for just one goal. The fans left. They actually managed the land to get a draw, and they could have lost. And it's, I don't know, it's if you think about it, that this is like the supporters. We are only going to support you when things are going well. If things are going wrong, I'm going to quit the stadium. They were very upset about that. And yeah, Neymar, I think he's got a complicated future at PSG. There will be going many, many chances. We will see what happened with Mauricio Pochettino, his future. Is very much up in the air. I don't know, but about Neymar, I've seen him here in this stadium many times. I still can't understand why he decided to go to Ligue 1. I'm not meaning to leave Barcelona, because maybe he was smelling that this club was getting in some kind of chaos and he wanted to be a main role, not in the shadow of Messi. But he ended up in a team that is probably not for him, only thinking about money. More him, probably his agents and his father, they thought about money and not maybe about his career, because now he's 30 years old, he's got one of the highest salaries. It's difficult to think in a future different than Paris for Neymar.
Do you know when, well, they went to France because he thought it was going to be easy street and he wanted to do the big cheese. Do you know when hugely paid, underperforming superstars don't deliver, crowds get upset and they whistle at you?
He doesn't seem bothered by it.
Oh, he's bothered.
You think?
I'm just wondering if this is new to him. Yeah, they've won the league on. Spare me. Right? He did a documentary because, I paraphrase, he wanted the people to understand him.
His side of the things.
Yeah, right? His side of things. Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. And I don't, I'm not interested in ultras in this. Look. Football supporters have no interest about understanding a player. Maybe some do. But the priority is, what can you deliver me for my club, for my season book, my, you know, ticket price? What success can you deliver me? That's first and foremost. What understanding a player is secondary. So he clearly is, and again, making comment to whistles and jeers and making documentaries because he wants people to understand them. That's not what the game about. But everybody's a complex, there's a lot of complex characters about. I might be a complex character myself, some might say. I don't know. But I don't try and justify myself. I do what I think is right, right? And I try and do the job to my best of my ability. And if that's not good enough, then fine. But here's the deal. Supporters get upset when they see what they think is substandard. And I think for PSG, him, Messi and others have been substandard to what the Paris Saint-Germain fans thought they were getting, particularly in the Champions League.
I look forward to the Craig Burley documentary. Neymar obviously had these interesting comments. Frank, I wonder what you make of them, and if you think he's really going to get whistled and booed for another 3 years. Can he tolerate that?
I don't know. I think it's very, very tricky and very hard to, you know, at some point to analyze and say in 30 seconds what I think about Neymar, what I think about the club, what's going on and what's going wrong with that club. But if Neymar thinks he did enough for the club, I think he's wrong. And if he gets 4 million euros, it's because what he did before, but because we expect something from him at the present time. I think Paris Saint-Germain fans don't care about what Neymar did when he was in Barcelona. They want him to do something with Paris. When you play between 27 and 30 games a season with Paris Saint-Germain and perform the way he performed the last 5 years, being injured at the crucial time, you are, you know, sometimes at some point you deserve to be criticized, and it's part of your job. He's a fantastic player, no doubt about that. Everybody knows he has a talent, otherwise he wouldn't be at Paris Saint-Germain and he would have played for Barca. But people, they want to see something from him, and they want to see something from him at the right time for the right games. Not against Angers, not against maybe Strasbourg, my former club, but against Real Madrid, you know, and other big clubs. That's why he's paid 4 million euros a month. That's why we expect, or the fans expect, so much from him. So I understand the fans. You know, I can sometimes say that the fans are hard, and they should be supporters and not only happy when the club wins. But in Paris Saint-Germain, it's very tricky because that club has developed a culture of losing crazy games where nobody feels it's possible to lose those games. And it's not once, it's not twice. So Neymar is not guilty for the first one because he was on the other side. But for the second one against Manchester United, and then that one against Real Madrid, which was a big shame. It's a big shame. You have to understand the fans. The fans are teased by the others, and the other fans all around the world because of those performances. And so you can understand that they can be frustrated, annoyed, and upset towards the stars.
Hammering PSG.
That was a long 30 seconds, Frank, wasn't it?
There was never a short 30 seconds with Frank.
Once we got him going, that was a long 30 seconds.
Did, by the way, win their 10th Ligue 1 title, PSG. So.
Yeah, well done. Yeah, cheers.
All right, that's it for us for now. Extra time is coming up. I will wake you up with the extra time questions. You ready for that? It starts right now. Everybody, welcome into this edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time.
That was some pause.
Don Hutchison, Frank
LeBeau,
Craig
pause.
Burley.
That pause for effect.
And an awkward pause, as well as your Twitter questions
just hammered
here. Hey, PSG.
Yeah, well, why not? Messi went there for the money as well, didn't he?
Oh, now you want to go in on Messi too?
Well, he did.
Anybody else?
Well, he did.
Well, he didn't really have too many other options, right? Who's going to pay?
Messi never had options? Well, he'd take less money. Take less money. They went for the money.
You think that'll happen now? You think people who went to PSG for the money over the last like half decade will now see it and be like, I don't want to go there? Money still talks.
Does so. Well, we wouldn't know.
No. Craig, do you really have any more criticism on how bad Manchester United are? They are shambles of their former
self. I've run out of superlatives. I've run out of words. I've just run out of things. They just bore me now. I mean, it's so bad. It's like, I can't believe. I never thought it would get worse.
It has gotten worse under Ragnar, hasn't it?
Yes.
Like,
and that's down to, that's, I think that's too, well, there's more arms to this than meets the eye.
Right.
But, one, he has achieved nothing in his time there, very little on the field. And two, the players have almost sacked it.
Mm-hmm.
They've just thrown the towel in.
What happened last weekend? You said they were going to be top four.
Because the other two were absolutely rank rotten as well.
You think they'd be still in a race if Ole was the manager?
No.
Oh, so then...
In a race for top four?
Yeah, I mean, we just saw the odds there were 100-1.
Honestly, the decision-making at this club, that's all, you know. Mm. Oh, my God.
Don, what is the percent chance that Newcastle finish in a European place next season from the drop zone to the top half of the table?
Hey, don't forget this season, Sebi.
Easy.
Forget this season, by the way. Because there's a ridiculous scenario, and I'm not even going to try and go there.
Well, go on.
Where ninth in the Premier League might actually be enough.
Does that...
Everyone's got to win.
Does that scenario involve
everyone's
percentages?
Everyone's got to win conferences. No, it's two. That percentages must be like one, because teams have got to win the Europa Conference, teams have got to win Europa League, Premier League teams have got to win the Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to rain on Thursday, it's got to be sunny on a Saturday, and ninth can get a European spot.
All right, what about next year?
Next season. Next year, I'm going to go. I'm not going to be greedy, being a Newcastle fan. I'm not going to be greedy because I would take top off. I'm going to say there is a 30% chance of a European spot next season.
Wow. That sounds pretty optimistic.
Yeah.
For all three of you.
Is that optimistic?
Well,
yeah, for Newcastle, I think.
You're looking at optimism, but he's not as optimistic as he's finishing this year. Done.
Right, right.
All the dominoes fall in the right. By the way, Frank, where are you?
No, where is Frank? That's
Frank,
a little. It's a different
Frank,
look.
Where in the world are you?
Well, because I'm with Don. I think Newcastle is back to the business. You know, they're ninth right now, and I think next season they're gonna buy players and they're gonna finish in Europe.
No,
I'm sorry, Don. Meant physically, Frank. Where are you?
Where are you in the world? Where is your passport taking you? Where are you?
Oh, I'm in Normandy. I'm in my new house in Normandy. Ooh. So it's my new studio. You don't see the difference, guys.
No, I do.
Because it's the same setup. But I'm the first time that I. What?
No, it's the first time in the studio.
We didn't notice it. To be honest with you, I didn't really notice the backdrop because of the colour of your shirt. It was sort of blinding me a little bit. So you've moved to Normandy?
Well...
No, this is one of his many homes.
You've moved to Normandy?
No.
Wow.
I still have my house in Paris, and I bought a little farm, let's say, in Normandy. So I go back and forth.
Oh, and another one in Luxembourg. How many houses have you got?
I remember the weekend.
Don't go there.
No, I'm not going there.
Yeah. I remember the time when I bought a little farm in Normandy.
My daughter lives in Luxembourg. Don't start.
In fact, that's what I'm going to do when I finish this show tonight.
Go buy a farm in Normandy. Just a little one.
I'd like to take it step by step. I'm going to go home. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go on the internet, and I'm going to see if there's anything in my price range in Normandy.
In Frank's neighborhood.
Not in Frank's neighborhood.
For the guys, what was more challenging late in a game?
He doesn't want me to move there, Frank. See,
he doesn't want you in his neighborhood.
No.
Yeah, no.
Going what?
What was more challenging late in the game?
We don't want Scottish people around us.
Frank.
Wow.
Frank.
See if we can get through this.
I agree.
Defending a lead, being down a goal, or being deadlocked tied. For the guys, what was more challenging late in the game? So you could either be defending a lead, you could be down a goal.
Being behind.
Hold on a minute. Oh, I think I'll prefer behind, to be surely. Down a goal. I mean, what's more challenging?
Yeah.
Being down a goal.
No. But there's like the pressure of maybe holding on to a lead. You could.
Well, at least you've got something to hold on to.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't that great of a question, is what you're telling me.
Well, I mean...
Ridiculous question.
I mean, I'm trying to be nice here. For once. What do you think? You 2 minutes left plus a bit of injury time, unless you're playing Barcelona and he puts 37 minutes on like they did today. Injury time, well, not quite. I embellished that, but it wasn't far off. You'd want to be a goal up. It's something to hold on to, isn't it? That's. You're listening to me?
Yeah, I am.
Well, you're not.
I am.
You're writing. And I know you can't do two things at once, so you were not listening.
Do the guys remember a game that they absolutely dominated but ended up on the losing side?
Yeah, Scotland-Brazil, 1998 World Cup.
You absolutely dominated and lost, was it 3-0?
Well, no, listen, we lost 2-1.
It was 2-1?
You know why, Sebastian, we don't want any Scottish in Normandy? Because they brag too much.
Did Frank LaBeouf just say that somebody else brags too much?
Yeah.
Wow.
The man that normally does this show with the World Cup sitting behind him.
Frank. Any games like that?
What?
Were you dominated but were on the losing side?
Can't remember.
No?
I need those questions in advance. I just can't remember.
Yeah, Don, what do you think? Anything jump to mind? Games that you dominated?
Like Craig, you need a bit of time to sort of go into the Rolodex and the memory. But Craig, what was the game when we played Belgium or Scotland and they spawned a 2-2 draw and we had to go into the playoffs?
The Van World Bouten Cup qualifier.
What was that game?
Yeah, well, it was Scotland-Belgium.
World Cup qualifier?
Yeah. A World Cup or a Euro qualifier, I can't remember. It was at Hampden. And we absolutely swarmed all over them early on. And we were 2-0 up. They were down to 10 men. 2-0. 2-0 at the time. And we were cruising. I mean, battering them. Then the Vilmot scored the goal. I'm going to give you the whole game here, so I've got 90 minutes.
This is the 11 minutes of stoppage time.
Mark Vilmots scored with a header, and then an injury time right at the end, Daniel van Bouten, who went on to play for Bayern Munich, big old unit, came up and bashed one in with the head, 2-2.
I played with him for Marseille.
Yeah, you know the guy, yeah, and slightly more hair than you, Frank, I have to say, and bosh. 2-2, Don, wasn't it? And we never recovered from that. Never qualified.
No.
That was a. People are not really interested whether it was a dagger to the heart, but it was, Don, wasn't it?
Don?
Wasn't it? Killed us.
You know what? Do you want a story about Daniel van Bouten?
No. Is it clean?
Yes. You want a story about Daniel van Bouten? Yes, you want a story?
Yes.
Yeah. 30 seconds, a short 30 seconds. Daniel van Bouten played for Marseille, and Hollywood called him to play the new Tarzan in the in an American movie. But because he didn't speak English, he couldn't be the new Tarzan. Mm. But that guy he had the body of the new Tarzan. It was huge.
Yeah. That was rather disappointing.
Voila.
There's not the story, I mean the result, but I'm sure there's been many.
Well, it's to the point of the question, right? You absolutely dominate a game.
It's a big qualifier. You're against your other main rival in the group, Belgium, and you chuck it all away, and they're down to 10 men because you switch off.
Frank, who is the most underrated player you played with on the French national team? Underrated.
What does underrated mean?
Wow. Guy who didn't get the credit they deserved.
What about Lizarazu?
He was good.
No, he was very good. But did he get the credit, Frank, he deserved? No?
No, he was. I think maybe Vincent Candela. Vincent Candela played for Roma, and he was number two for France because Lizarazu was playing as a fullback. But Vincent Candela was an absolute outstanding player, played for Roma and you can ask Totti what he thought about him. I think he would say that he was maybe one of the best fullback in the world. He was absolutely fantastic, not very known, but fantastic player. Yeah, definitely underrated because he deserved better. No, Lizarazu, he won the Champions League with Bayern Munich, almost signed for Arsenal. He had a fantastic career, and he was recognized as a fantastic player.
You know who is underrated on those teams that I feel like people don't talk enough about?
Go on.
Frank Leboeuf.
Don't say that. Don't say that. Get a big head.
I love you, Sebastian. I love you.
Never mind get his head out of his house. He won't be able to get out of Normandy.
That's right. We'll be doing live hits from Normandy for the duration. All right, that's it for this edition of Extra Time. That's it.
Many silly questions today.
Nope, just the five.
Just the one that said, would you prefer to be leading in the game or not leading?
You're right. That for a panel of former professional footballers may have been very obvious. We'll see if we get any more obvious questions on tomorrow's edition of Extra Time. Hope we'll see you for ESPN FC, available daily right here on ESPN+.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.